Hello, friends. Welcome back to How to Talk to Weirdos, where we discuss communication with people who are different than you. And since we're all unique, that's pretty much everyone. When someone has a different style of communication, they can seem like a weirdo. And if they seem that way to you, you probably seem that way to them. As I like to say, everyone's kind of a weirdo. We're going to talk about some of the assumptions that we make and other pitfalls of communication so that we can all improve. There's a lot to cover, so let's get started. Welcome back to How to Talk to Weirdos. Today we have a very special guest, Katja Schleicher. That's as close as I can come. She is a sought-after communications trainer, consultant, and coach. She built up her expertise by studying both linguistics and psychology, then had a long career in PR, advertising, TV, and corporate communications for high-tech companies. And then she's been on the road training and coaching for 20 years now. Katja, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you here. And I had to pick and choose from your very deep bio. Are there any things I missed that you'd like to share about what you do?
No, if you put it like that, it sounds as I would have been on the road for all my life. Actually, it is a little bit like that because I'm a person who found a, let's call it an early calling in my life. So already at school, it was language, literature, words in general, that I had the feeling of that they have impact. And that never changed. And, you know, being mommy's good girl, I decided I make a living out of that, a true one, like a profession. And that's what I did. So In the times where many people think of, oh, I need to reinvent myself, I only reinvented myself within this communication frame. But writing and speaking and teaching other people how to speak and write, this is even after more than two decades, it's really my passion. It's what I do. Yeah.
Wonderful. You mentioned impact and you head Impact Communications. Can you tell us more about the organization?
It's, you know, a pan-European, and if they let me, international training and coaching bureau. And in the focus of it is threefold. Let me put it like that, because these three things I consider most important if it comes to communication in today and tomorrow. One of them is that we need to talk to each other interculturally. And if I mean interculturally, I mean within a communication, within a company, it's very often very hard for the learning and development department to talk to purchasing, for instance, or the finance department to the marketing department. It seems like two different universes. And in my trainings and whatever I do, I bring these two universes together because it must be possible for us peacefully to talk to each other to achieve better results. The same we have with when we talk about generations, right? All the debates about Gen Y, Gen Z, I'm Gen X, right? It's like, oh yeah, they don't do this. Maybe we should change our communication approach to each other to get to know each other more easily and better. So intercultural is one aspect in the work I'm doing or redoing. Second one is agility, because agile working, agile collaboration needs a different communication, needs more questions, needs less imperatives, needs more collaborative communication than monologue.
Can you explain what you mean by agile?
Yeah, it's the way we work together in more flexible environments, right? More working together in projects, for instance, in projects than in fixed circumstances. It's more often changing. So today, because you have a certain expertise in something, you work on that project and in that surrounding with that particular set of people. And tomorrow, the same expertise could be required in a completely different place in terms of location, but in a different surrounding as well, so that you work all of a sudden in a very young environment. And the project is much more volatile. So this new way of working, this new way of collaborating requires a lot of changes in communication. And the last one I do is, or what I focus on in the company, this is narrative. So meaning not storytelling exclusively, but as we are wired for story, it is much easier, especially when you talk in scientific or in very highly corporate environments, that we should stick a little bit more to the narrative than just to the bullet points on PowerPoint. So these three things, and I do that in three languages.
I love everything. What are the three languages?
German, English, and Dutch.
I love everything about what you just said. You are repeating things that I've said over and over. In particular, on the project base, I've done a lot of work in companies where there might be a project leader, mm-hmm. and the leader is in charge of people who might be two levels higher than them on the org chart. And boy, that communication is a delicate balance that they need to,
exactly.
to walk.
Right. And that's something that can be taught. That's something that needs to be trained. And if you can bring people to go with I always call it a healthy confidence into those meetings, knowing, okay, yeah, there is a power distance between that person who is two levels up, is two levels my senior, but still I'm running the project. How do I speak up without pushing the envelope too far, without overstepping all the time, or the other side, without holding back too often or too much?
I have to admit that when I was in my mid-20s, I was mm-hmm. running a project, and the sponsor of the project was a very senior executive, and I gave the rules for this meeting, and he broke the rules, and I kind of stopped him from talking, and you could see everybody in the room just stop and look and wonder what I was thinking. And I
Crazy.
Had to go after the meeting. I went to him, I'm like, sorry about that. He's like, no, I understand what you're doing. He's like, just caught me a little off guard. I'm like, I'll be more delicate next time.
But isn't that good that you had in this particular moment, you had an executive like that? Many of us have different experiences, and due to, let's say, one or two bad experiences in the early years of your career, you said in your mid-20s, we very often do not dare to do differently. And this is important, that bad experiences, negative experiences, should not keep us from moving forward and indeed trying new things. If it's especially good for the project, or you know that you should step up, or there is, you know, there is the other side where you say, you should step down here, you should step back, and you should make sure that the power within the room is distributed differently here. So be aware of the power in the room, but take it if necessary, and use the proper words for it.
It's so interesting. The other experience I had on the flip side is that a different time I was running a project, and it was new to everybody.
Yeah.
And someone told me, they said, you've basically got a tiger by the tail. Let mm-hmm. it run. Let the people go and do what they're going to do, and you kind of have to see what happens. You can't control this. You have to let it run and let the people do their thing. So it's a fine balance sometimes in that situation.
Because controlling is controlling. I always think that framing helps. That you, if you set a good frame for a meeting, then people indeed know where to run to, but they mm-hmm. allow themselves to run. And this is where you, in with a good communication, you can find a balance. So, okay, this is the framework. This is when we meet again. But in between them, let's have coffee, discuss, but I won't be in your way. And it's also a thing in communication, especially when you're a project manager or or kind of have a leadership position, when do you stand in front of your people communication-wise, and when do you have their backs in a sense of, okay, you're safe and sound, but go do your thing. I greenlighted that, and you do, and I'm having your back in the truest sense of the word. And then there is times where you have to step up and stand in front of your people in an all hands meeting and say, like, okay, guys, this is not good news. Next week we have to cut down, or the budget is not available, the financing didn't get through, all the things. So these two things, standing in front of someone and communicating and having their backs, is such an important skill, I think, communication-wise, and to know the difference when to do what. Because if you're standing in front of your people at the wrong moment, you stand in their way, right? So, and these things, I think, they really can be taught. It doesn't require a natural talent for that. I think 80% communication can be really learned and practiced. It's no rocket science, in my perspective.
It's not rocket science, but it takes paying attention and practice.
You're so right. Right, and both of them, paying attention, this kind of more, it's more the inner part, that you listen properly, right? What does that mean, listen properly? Not just to listen to wait my turn, but really to listen, to absorb what the other person said or the other group said, so that you are able to paraphrase it in a way that it brings the project forward. Right? This is a skill that comes first, and then in the second part, and this is the practice part. I always found it fascinating when I work with, let's say, someone needs to give a speech in an all hands meeting, and we practice that, and these people try to get the words out of their mouth in different ways, just to listen to your own words. Oh, how does that sound? If I use freedom, like simple things like that can, especially when you work with your own body, with your own voice, have such a huge impact for the audience you speak to.
I love it. And going back to listening, because communication is a two-way street. There's how you present your ideas and how you receive information. But something like 78% of all business degrees have a focus on presenting, and only 11% ever even mention listening skills. But it's so important, and it's something that you're not going to get in most trainings. But it's such an important skill, being able to listen well.
Although I have to admit, I would be happy if he would teach the proper presentation skills as well. To be honest, very often, yes, we have more focus on sending than on receiving. That is still true. But even the sending part, in what I see, and there might be a difference between the United States and actually there is a difference between Europe and the United States, because in the United States you know, public speaking is taught in schools, right? It comes way earlier, while in Europe that is not an incremental part of your education. And that is why very often we, and I'm speaking as with my European heart here, very often when we encounter colleagues from the Americas, with their natural confidence on stage, and here's my question for you, and you think, whoa, now that must be world changing. And that's a real problem for us in Europe. Very often it's just bullshit that comes after, and we are so disappointed. We're like, ah, it was such a good beginning. So, and here it's very often the other way around, that we put together very detailed facts and figures, and we check everything, spelling, but we have no clue how to connect to an audience. We do not have any clue how to make them enthusiastic about our idea. right? So if he could combine these two ways, that would be brilliant. And of course, I think every child everywhere in the world should learn that from an early moment on. That would help us all.
Well, you seem like a European who's combined both, so wonderful.
Experience. Let me put it like that. I worked for a couple of American companies, and I had the chance as well to admire as to be frustrated by that particular American way of speaking, especially when the American colleagues came over to Europe to deliver a presentation or introduce a product or whatever. And let me give you that example of standing ovations, right? A typical American thing. Someone is speaking, could be a mediocre bullshit, but you get standing ovation, and then you answer like, oh yeah, great job, afterwards. Nobody believes that over here. Nobody. And the American colleagues were always very disappointed when, yeah, there was applause when it was good, but it could be that it was just a little applause if it was mediocre. And then they were like, what happened here? Don't they like me? So, you know. So, oh, that's not fair. Oh, yeah, it is, right? So it is so different in terms of perception. And in my view, we could learn so much from each other in the way of how to motivate an audience and how to get them to understand what your real point is. So that is something I think we should do much, much more on both sides. Mm-hmm. Be more specific on the fact side and be more enthusiastic on the narrative side.
Yeah, it is definitely a balance, and it depends on the audience. I do a lot of work with engineers, and engineers very often tend to go into much more detail than the rest of the audience wants.
And they should. They should, because deep dives with an engineer, it makes go. My heart goes open all the time, because all of a sudden, if they get the room, if they get the time, if they get the chance to elaborate on their ideas, all of a sudden you have, I don't know, the most emotional engineer you've ever seen, right? But it takes a different surrounding. It takes different circumstances. If you tell an engineer, okay, give me your idea in 30 seconds, the typical pitch situation, it might be that they draw back and say, it's a little more complicated than that. But here you can work with both sides, right? Because there's always a way to make things more simple in the best way, or more enthusiastic, or give somebody the opportunity to say like, okay, let's dive a little bit deeper into that subject, and I show you the beauty of that complexity. Both ways.
Yeah, and the key is knowing your audience and what they need. If they don't want all the details, giving it to them is going to make them crazy. And if they do want the details, not going into them makes them just feel like it was a waste of time.
And to answer the question, what is a detail for them, and what is maybe this one detail they need and the other 23 you could skip in that particular one? And of course, you cannot know your audience all the time in detail and in particular. It's very often not possible. But what I always encourage the people I work with to do is make a kind of a general, not assumption, but make a general knowledge about that audience. Let's say if it's engineers, they will be very process interested and result interested. So you probably can always count on that. How is something working? How is something built? This is a question, whatever kind of engineering these people are in, this probably is going to be interesting to them, I think.
And sometimes you have a mixed audience and you need to give some of both. You need to spend some time on the very high level and you need to spend some time digging down into details, but you have to be careful not to spend too much time, because then you're going to lose the other people. So it's
what
walking
do you
a
then?
Tightrope.
What is your best tip? What is your advice then?
You know, I think it really is just not spending too much time on one side or the other. If you can kind of sense, if you're talking big picture, when the detail people are starting to zone out, and then it's time to shift over to the details. And if you stay there too long, the big picture people are going to start zoning out, and you need to tie it both. And the, you know this, I'm sure, the question is always, what's in it for them? Why should they care? And the more you are talking about why they care about what you're talking about, the more they're going to be able to pay attention, even if it's a detail and they're a big picture person.
One thing I add on to that is that I let them try to find out what is in what you're going to say, what is your wow for the audience, and what is your aha for the audience. Because when they can define, or when they can name these very, very specifically, it helps very often to see where you need to go. More enthusiasm, so probably you do more wow, more manifestation, probably you go more for aha. So, and these two, if you let the person who is speaking split their arguments, split their stories into those two buckets, and then let's see what they can take us at the appropriate time, then very often the audience reacts more appropriate, and as a speaker, you are more rewarded.
Nice. Yep. Going back to the amount of applause that Europeans tend to give compared to Americans, it's kind of like tipping in a restaurant. In America, tipping in a restaurant, everyone tips every time. And it's a pretty high amount relative to Europeans, who, my understanding is, if something's really good, they'll tip. If it's not so good, it's not necessary.
Yeah, because we connect, if speaking about the tipping, especially the tipping part, in the US, the waiters are not paid very much extra, so they live off the tip. Where in Europe, you know, a little bit more social security and all that, there is a higher amount. I'm not saying that they are paid well, but they are paid better than in the US, so that indeed over time, there has been an understanding that tip is something that has to do with quality.
Right.
And it's not paid automatically. True. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if our habit of tipping has slid over into our habit of applause.
Good idea. Good question. Good question. So this kind of automaticness, okay, you spoke here, you have deserved this amount of applause. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting point. Interesting point. Good question to raise. I don't know.
We'll have to do a study.
Yeah.
I have watched some of your other talks, and one thing I've heard multiple times is talking is gold and silence is the beginning of all troubles.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that and what it means to you?
But it's a very deep personal belief that, you know, and the quote I'm giving you now is sad to be from Queen Margaret of Denmark. I don't know if that is true, but she said all the wars that happened because of the conversations that didn't. So I personally believe in the conflict resolving power of people talking to each other. I'm not saying that we should not shut up every now and then and keep quiet. Silence is something very beautiful. But there is two different kinds of silence. There is this silence, this kind of radio silence that you, oh my God, I don't talk to that group of people. Now, living in the US, you're absolutely having an idea what I'm talking about. Polarization is a huge problem. And now that we are facing more and more and more a violent polarization, looking at Israel, looking at Gaza, in my opinion, helped if people are at a table or somewhere on a neutral point and start talking. There is always something that brings us together. There is always something that keeps us apart. Both of them are interesting, but not talking, like in the sense of ignoring the other is, in my personal communication mindset, is the beginning of all troubles. And that goes very small. When you're the leading the leader of your department, you're the manager, and you come into the office, if you go to the office, depending on, and you're not greeting the people because you're deep in thought as an engineer, then this is bad. Then me as a coach, as a trainer, would help you to support yourself in, this is the moment I am in public with people that work with me, for me, so I need to be attentive to them, even if I am deep in thought. Because if I'm not, it could be that they feel left out, ignored, and especially when they are a couple of levels below me in the hierarchy. It's complicated. And we are human beings. We want to be acknowledged just for our being. So talking is, in my opinion, gold. Not small talk, but having a conversation with each other, sharing things that resonate with us. And it doesn't need to be personal, private, right? There's so many things in the world that we can connect to that have are not political, that are not business, and they are not private. So there's still enough room. But not talking. I really, really think that there's a lot of trouble in the world due to not talking to each other.
And you can even see it in personal relationships. I was in a relationship before, and when we would get into an argument or a disagreement about something, we would basically just stop talking. And it might be days until we really start talking again. And we would really only start talking because we were tired of not talking anymore. Yes, as opposed to the relationship I'm in now, a problem comes up, we address it. It's not always fun. It's not always comfortable, but it gets resolved.
There is a thing that I, and that might be something you have less trouble doing in Europe because due to, you know, multiple nationalities, more languages around in a closer space. When you have this feeling of I don't know what to say, or I don't know if I should say something, it's always fascinating if you imagine to talk to that person in a different language. That is why very often people who come from two different language backgrounds, French, let's take someone from France and from Denmark. She is from Denmark, he is from France. It's a nice example. And okay, both try to speak the other person's language, but you are never kind of fluent in that language. It's not your mother tongue. And due to that aspect, you try to make sure, and you put more effort into making sure that the other person is understanding you, because you love the person and you want the person to understand what you have said and what you really mean by that. So you put much more effort into your conversations. And I think this is something we should do more often, even if the loved ones that speak the same language are around us the whole day. And that is one of the reasons why we very often start to mumble or ignore them, or thinking, oh yeah, they know anyway what I mean. No, they don't.
Yeah, when someone is not the same native speaker as you, you make many fewer assumptions. You never assume that you understand them or they understand you. And it's something I talk about all the time. Stop assuming you understand and they understand.
Yeah. Yeah, and imagine the other person would speak a different language. It could be a different company culture, right? Like, okay, I'm from marketing. You're from R&D. I don't speak your language. So, and then make sure that you like these people. And all of a sudden, it is like speaking a foreign language. You feedback more often. You have more loops. You check if that is really understood what you meant, or you do another round and say, okay, let me try differently. right? And that's very helpful in all communication.
I say it over and over again to people. Check in, make sure that they understood you, make sure that you understood them.
Yeah,
And
because I'm
people are
done.
so afraid to ask,
Yeah.
but just ask.
And only then they are the group of people you talk to is able to do whatever you wanted them to do, because most of the times, hopefully, we have an intention with the communique. When we give a presentation or we speak in an all hands meeting, yeah, we want our teams to change something, to do something, to try something, whatever it is. And if they leave the room like, yeah, okay, well, now what? One of my questions is to the people I work with is always, and what happens on Monday? Assuming that everybody goes back to normal, right? The peak is off, and now everybody's back to the everyday boring office life. If it's at home or in the office directly, doesn't matter. And then our daily work, the average thing, the agenda is packed. So, and then within that surroundings and circumstances to check, okay, what is different now? And if you can anchor a change, then now then you probably have given a valid impulse during that presentation a couple of days before.
And that's why I think repetition is so key. When I do trainings for new managers, it's typically over 8 to 12 weeks, because if you give everything all at once, it's great. They drink from the fire hose and then 3 days later, the book is back on the shelf and they're doing exactly what they did before. But if they have to check in and show you what they've been practicing, then change gets made.
Yeah, so then the steps are smaller then, right? And then indeed what you said, the insecurities get a little less, and it is it's easier that the bumps to overcome, to, for instance, ask a question, pick up the phone to someone I don't know, and check, how did you do that? So even getting peer support very often, especially what you say, with people who are new in their role, in their position, they need this shoulder-to-shoulder support from indeed peers, right? It's so important to them, and if you encourage them to through a smaller period of time where they can work on that, you anchor what they learn more easily. Yeah, totally, totally.
And then they can build on it. Well, we need to start wrapping up. So I've got the three questions I ask everybody at the end. The first is, where is a place you've traveled and loved? And part B is, where is a place you have not yet been but would love to go?
Let me start with that one. On very top of our list at the moment, due to the very huge difference from what we experience here in Europe, is Japan. So that is on our list at the moment, and we are in the planning for the midterm, let me put it like that, for Japan. A place I've been and liked a lot, and I give you my most recent example because we just have come back from there at the beginning of the year, is the Spanish Atlantic coast. So we've been in the Basque country, in Bilbao and in San Sebastian, and both cities have impressed us a lot. Like in San Sebastian is like Paris at the sea, at the Atlantic, and the food is great, and it's very elegant, both cities. So yeah, that left a huge impression on us, just a recent one. Although I have to admit, Europe is full of wonderful places.
It sure is. But now I'm sold on that region, so I'm going to have to check it out. My second question is, who do you think is a great communicator, whether public figure or just someone in your life?
And you know, that is a very complicated question. Let me to answer twofold. One thing I like when people who are very well known pick up a good cause and talk about that. Now, and at the moment, there is a lot of discussions and debate about female and feminine communication. And Meryl Streep had a wonderful quote on that women learned to speak men about the last during the last 200 years. And now it's time that men learn to speak woman. So she is able, and that's one of the reasons why I name her as a great communicator, because she uses her celebrity status, having a microphone, for a wonderful cause. I like that. It's cool. And I see that. So Meryl Streep is one example. I see that with a lot of celebrities. It could be Greta Gerwig, unfortunately, probably not getting an Oscar. Too bad. But anyway, I see that with Eliza Schlesinger, the comedian, who said, you know what? And I'm telling you this on stage because I have a microphone. So this is something I think is good, especially for communicators. And if it comes down to, you know, the ones we all admire, probably, and we always go back to, I have to name two, both male in this particular case. The first one is due to his passion as Sir David Attenborough. And if you want to me, one of his probably best speeches, watch the opening speech for the climate conference in Glasgow. 2 years, the last one, this one was Dubai, so the one before. That was perfect in every instance. And of course, yes, Barack Obama is a great communicator.
Wonderful. All right, my last question is, what is one piece of communication advice that we can all benefit from?
Start talking. Don't be silent. Frame your question carefully. Be polite. Be friendly. Don't draw back all the time and say, okay, it's not my place, not my time. It is. Use it.
I like that. All right. As we wrap up, where can people go to find out more about you and or contact you?
It's very easy. One of my biggest network things is LinkedIn. And there's only two Katja Schleichers on LinkedIn. One of them is me. The other one is working in Germany. We got to know each other. So you'll easily find me on LinkedIn. And of course, the good old internet is a good way. You find me on the interview-training.eu for Europe, or on the website with my name, katjaschleicher.com. Katja Schleicher is one word. Or Twitter. Oh, it's X now. Wow. No, anyway. So, but yeah, you find me on Twitter there as well.
I will also go ahead and put that in the show notes so people can just go and find the correct spelling. All right, Katja, it has been so great having you here with us today. You are a woman after my own heart when it comes to communication. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks for listening to another episode of How to Talk to Weirdos. Hopefully you found it both interesting and useful. If either of those things is true, please share. Do you have a friend or a coworker who could benefit from listening? Maybe a family member you're going to be spending the holidays with? Please send them a link to your favorite episode and see if your conversations don't get just a little bit easier. I would really appreciate it. Thank you so much and have a great week.